daily newsletter to make sure you never miss anything. Technical productions by Rob Johnston. I'm Alan Cross.
You've been listening to the Ongoing History of New Music podcast with Alan Cross. Subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and everywhere you find your favorite podcasts.
QR Calgary is 770 CHQR AM, a Chorus Entertainment radio station.
This is Global News. I'm Joshua Azizi. The federal conservatives say they will cooperate with the liberals to end the U.S. trade dispute.
Leader Pierre Poilievre met with the conservative caucus on Sunday as they prepare to return to the House of Commons without him in the chamber. Poilievre said he's told Prime Minister Mark Carney that the conservatives are ready to work with the liberals to bring an end to tariffs imposed by the United States. Now, despite showing some cooperation, Poilievre went on to accuse Carney of putting his elbows down when it came to opening exemptions for some counter-tariffs levied against the U.S. Cooperation on any front would mark a departure from the Conservatives' relationship with the previous Liberal government led by former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. David Augustine, The Canadian Press.
Meanwhile, the Liberal Party caucus has voted against adopting the Reform Act, which would create a formal process for MPs to eject their party leader if the need to do so arises in the future. Parliament resumes on Monday. King Charles will read the throne speech Tuesday. President Donald Trump says the U.S. will delay implementation of a 50% tariff on goods from the European Union to buy time for negotiations with the bloc. Trump says the agreement came after a call Sunday with Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission.
We had a very nice call and I agreed to move it. I believe July 9th would be the date. That was the date she requested. Could we move it from June 1st to July 9th? And I agreed to do that, and that she said, we will rapidly get together and see if we can work something out.
Trump had threatened to impose the tariff on EU goods in a social media post on Friday. Russia and Ukraine have swapped hundreds of prisoners of war in the largest exchange since the invasion of Ukraine began. Reporter Marcus Moore says the swap came just hours after Ukraine was targeted by a massive Russian missile attack.
This latest offensive, the largest since Russia invaded Ukraine more than 3 years ago, involved nearly 400 ballistic missiles and drones. Ukrainian officials say killing at least 18 people and wounding dozens more. These attacks come amid the conclusion of a historic prisoner swap between the two countries. Both sides agreeing to exchange 1,000 captives each. But despite that cooperation, airstrikes have only seemed to intensify.
The prisoner exchange was arranged during peace talks held in Istanbul earlier this month. The fifth anniversary of the murder of a black man by Minneapolis police is being marked at vigils across the U.S.
In Houston, where George Floyd grew up, civil rights attorney Ben Crump spoke alongside relatives.
That knee on George Floyd's neck was like the knee on black America's neck. And we all are struggling to breathe.
Despite the Trump administration moving to drop court-approved agreements to enforce police reform.
It does not change the reality that we are committed to rebuilding this police department.
So citizens can trust it, says Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara. I'm ABC's Chuck Sievertson.
The Canadian government will now be deciding whether to list the snowy owl as threatened under the Species at Risk Act.
Earlier this month, the Committee on the Status of Endangered Wildlife in Canada announced it had assessed the bird as threatened. Experts say the decision is yet another concerning sign of the changes shaping Canada's Arctic. The co-chair of the subcommittee overseeing birds says snowy owl observations have declined about 40% over 24 years. That's due to a combination of climate change and other threats. Louise Blight says climate change reduces sea ice and increases shrub cover in the tundra, which both provide important habitat for birds. The snowy owl is also Quebec's official bird. Naira Ahmed, The Canadian Press.
From the Global News Desk, I'm Joshua Azizi.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jump, unlock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, bring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it, buy it, use it.
Live across Canada, this is Conversations with Ben O'Hara Byrne.
You didn't get the hint. We're going to talk technology in this first hour. A really fascinating book about a really fascinating topic. But first, let me start with some numbers that are pretty mind-blowing. Apple's share of the smartphone market in this country for iPhones alone, 60%. 60%. That is an incredible market share for one device made by one company. That means a majority of smartphone users in this country own one company's product. In 2023, Apple shipped over 231 million iPhones. Back in 2007 when they launched it, 1.4 million. So do the math. 231 in 2023, up from 1.4 in 2007. And in its financial year last year, iPhones alone generated $201 billion in revenue. There's something like 1.4 billion iPhones in use around the world. It is an absolutely astounding success story that happened in this century. Because you go back 25 years, Apple's success was by no means a sure thing. The company had struggled through the 90s. They lacked direction. They were bleeding money. Steve Jobs returned to the helm of the company he had founded and co-founded in 1976. And Apple's birth rebirth began first with the iMac, then in 2001 with the iPod. But the real game changer, the goose that would lay that golden egg for the company, was and remains the iPhone introduced in 2007.
So, three things: a widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod, a phone. Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
The late Steve Jobs there, and they certainly did. No one knew how incredibly successful it would be, but one of the reasons it has been is because they set up this mass production, this ability to mass produce these things, because they're high tech, right, in southern China. They developed this entirely new supply chain, and with the help of some Taiwanese companies such as Foxconn, who had already sort of set up shop there, they built this remarkable supply chain. It provides the components from screws to camera lenses, touch screens, and they trained millions of workers to do it well, and of course, to do it inexpensively. But China was also allowed to take advantage of, you know, I mean, ask yourself, why did they give up their labor force that way? Why did they give land to build the factories? Why would they do that? Well, there was a quid pro quo here. Apple gave China the trained and skilled workforce that they needed for the technological know-how to make stuff in the 21st century, right? Such as smartphones, even stuff such as electric vehicles. And they used a lot of the technology they learned how to make that they had gotten from Apple to essentially build their own smartphone industry. So you could see there was a bleeding of the expertise, a training of the workforce, and in return, Apple got this incredible supply chain to be able to sell its phones quickly to the world. Apple makes 90% of its products in China. But Donald Trump is leaning in on them these days. Have a listen.
I had a little problem with Tim Cook yesterday. I said to him, Tim, you're my friend. I treated you very good. You're coming in with $500 billion, but now I hear you're building all over India. I don't want you building in India. You can build in India if you want to take care of India, because India is the highest, one of the highest tariff nations in the world. It's very hard to sell into India. Tim, I said, Tim, look, we've treated you really good. We put up with all the plants that you built in China for years. Now you got to build us. We're not interested in you building in India. India can take care of themselves. They're doing very well. We want you to build here, and they're going to be upping their production in the United States. Apple. So Apple's already in for $500 billion, but they're going to be upping their productions.
Yeah, Donald Trump there. So Apple all of a sudden finds itself caught between these two superpowers, right? China on one side, America and Donald Trump on the other. It's a story that is dealt with and told in a new book called Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. It's written by Patrick McGee. He's a Canadian who is a Financial Times correspondent based in San Francisco, and he joins me now. Patrick, thank you.
Cheers, Ben. I appreciate it.
What a prescient time to release this. I mean, who could have known after all the work that you've done and all the history that you dig into about Apple, about how this relationship grew and what it's become, that all of a sudden it would become sort of in a very bright spotlight because of Donald Trump. I mean, he's been talking about it this week.
Yeah, someone called it the best-timed book of 2025, and it's hard to disagree. And I would say, you know, aside from the obvious timing of the, you know, it literally went to the printers within 48 hours of Liberation Day, right? The tariff sort of trade war catalyst. But I would say the 2 years I spent writing it was brilliantly timed as well, because I didn't foresee the, you know, the implosion or what have you. This is the wrong word. The explosion of ChatGPT. And what that meant is it was so instrumental that the only big enterprise reporting that's really been done over the last few years has all been about AI, right? Maybe also about Elon Musk, but Elon and AI, nobody was paying attention to hardware and trade with China.
Yeah.
So, for instance, Tim Cook was interviewed by three major publications while I was on book leave. Nobody asked him about China. I'm just phenomenal.
That is because, as you point out, and it's worth the audience, it's worth listeners remembering this, millions and millions of Apple devices, every Apple iPhone or most that you're going to carry, and they sell tons of them, are made in China.
Yeah, I mean, they're all made in China. Even the ones that don't say they're made in China are made in China. Like, that's how crazy it is. Yeah, I mean, they sell about 230 million phones a year. And, you know, some people may say, oh, but Samsung sells more. Yeah, but think of it in automotive terms. It's one thing for GM or Volkswagen to sell 10 million cars a year. This is the equivalent of Porsche selling 10 million cars a year, right? iPhones are meticulously handcrafted. Obviously, there's all sorts of automation into building the components, but the degree that these are handcrafted is completely underrated. And they're only selling luxury products. I mean, even the quote-unquote cheap or affordable iPhone is, you know, at least twice the price of the average Android, right? The average Android is about $300. The average iPhone is $1,000.
Yeah. I mean, you do in this book go back into the history, because part of this is where Apple was at in the late 90s and why they ended up in China and how this relationship blossomed. It seemed like they were perfect partners at the time. But take me back a bit to the late 90s, because we forget that Apple, for a while there, looked like it was very much on its way out the door.
I mean, Apple turns 50 next year, so treat it like a person if you'd like. When Apple is, you know, learning to drive, you know, getting its drinking, you know, license or what have you, I mean, it is manufacturing all of its own products. It is only in the midlife crisis of 2001, 2002 that it really begins to shift production and abandon its own factories in favor of outsourcing. Nobody should blame Apple for hollowing out American jobs. Apple was the last holdout in a strategy that began in the early 80s of all the PC clone companies led by IBM. Outsourcing everything in general and then offshoring it to Asia. Apple is basically the last holdout, and by being the last holdout, it becomes nearly bankrupt. It cannot compete. Once Windows 95 comes out, there's really nothing special about the Mac. And so among the first things Steve Jobs does when he comes back from his 12-year exile is he hires people, not just Tim Cook, not just Jeff Williams, but a whole host of people. So many people from IBM that IBM itself begins calling Apple IBM West, right? A mature Steve Jobs understood what the young Steve Jobs didn't, which was that IBM was brilliant at a bunch of mundane things that he didn't care about. And his uncaringness for those things is what leads, even though Steve Jobs isn't there, to their near bankruptcy in 1996. So they have to get really good at logistics and distribution and manufacturing. And just like their late to MP3 players, but they make the best one, just like they're late to smartphones, but they make the best one, they're late to offshoring to China, but they discover what's possible in China like nobody else ever has.
Yeah. And on the reverse side, China at the time, I mean, certainly, but when I was there, and we could talk about China in the late 2000s and early 2010s. But when I first arrived there, it was just blossoming as a place for high-tech manufacturing. But when Apple first...
You need to tell the audience when you first got there.
Yes, I got there in 2008, right? And then I left in 2012. But
so, happen to go to the Sanlitun District, Beijing store?
Absolutely.
That was the first Apple store.
That was the first one. Listen, there were lineups to get into that store.
It was, You were there. I've reported
on
it.
And not just from, you know, Sanlitun is obviously an expat neighborhood. So most of the stores there attracted expats. There was a pretty significant expat community. The Apple store attracted everybody. There were kids from all over Beijing going to that Apple store because it was such a big deal. And as you point out, the book, Apple sort of falls into this huge sales in China. They were never particularly popular in China. The iPhone became this incredible symbiosis between Apple's success at building their phones in the country and all of a sudden becoming a consumer success within the country itself.
Yeah, if I'm allowed to have my own opinion on the book, the most fascinating section is called Insatiable Demand, the iPhone in China. And yeah. It is telling the story of how the iPhone becomes the status symbol across the country. And the San Leighton store opens for the Beijing Olympics. Apple literally thinks they're going to lose money on it. But hey, great marketing opportunity because the Olympics are going to be a big deal. Instead, it does quite well. But by 2010, when the iPhone 4 comes out, it does spectacularly well. Very few people had an iPhone 1 or a 3 or 3G. The iPhone 4 is when it starts going gangbusters. And it's partly because their operational edge is there and they're building them in the tens of millions. But it's also because it's designed like it's a real breakthrough in design. The chief designer said he wanted it to be so smooth that people would think it was licked by 1,000 kittens. He wanted it to look like it had fallen from space. And right. This is the time when Android, right, has basically stolen the idea, both hardware and software and operating system, of what the iPhone is. And Android overtakes iOS market share in 2010. So Apple's response to this is, let's make the next iPhone so damn good that they'll go broke or go crazy trying to replicate it. So right. Look, Apple knocks it out of the park on the design. Johnny Ive knocks it out of the park. But it goes so wild in China that at this point, there are 4 stores in China, 2 in Beijing, 2 in Shanghai. Okay. But it is really the most conspicuous thing you can have to show, like, I've made it. I'm part of the younger generation, yeah. Right? And you know, the young generation, like, loves and reveres the West, the sort of Americana dream and so forth. And the iPhone is the way to yeah. show it.
But it was weird. It wasn't, maybe when I was young, of course, it was all about the Iron Curtain and, you know, Soviet hockey players coming here and stuffing their suitcases full of pairs of Levi's. That wasn't it. It was the iPhone. The iPhone became that thing that everyone needed to have. And they liked it. They hated the BlackBerry. Like, you couldn't convince a young Chinese kid to like a BlackBerry. They thought they were bulky
and
ugly.
Don't say that to our Canadian audience.
No offense to our Canadian audience. But they loved the iPhone. And they didn't much love the Samsung phones. They just loved the iPhone. There was something about that product that really caught on in China. It was fascinating. Fascinating to watch.
I quote someone saying it wasn't even the phone, it was the symbol of the phone.
Right.
And you mentioned just before we started that you'd seen a bunch of fake stores. And some of these fake stores in China were so good that you had employees who thought they worked for Apple and they worked at a fake store.
Absolutely. I mean, in small sort of third tier cities, as they called it, as they're called in China, small by Canadian standards is ridiculous because there's usually 2-3 million people in them.
Yeah.
But they would have these little sort of Apple stores. They look like Apple stores. They weren't, but they had sort of the logo and the sign and all the same interior decorating. And so to speak, they had the products, but it starts to create a real problem for Apple's reputation within the Communist Party, within the government. Patrick McGee is with us this half hour. He is FT's San Francisco correspondent covering Apple and U.S. technology, but right now, he is author of a book called Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. We've talked a bit about Apple's origins, how it became a very popular device in China, but we'll step back a bit and figure out how exactly this symbiotic relationship between Apple and China as its manufacturing hub began and why it was so wildly and continues to be so wildly successful. That's next.
60 months, 6.2 low kilometers, 1500 in loyalty is flex plus tax, OEC maintenance included till 2027. Marty for North Star Ford, Bronco Sport, Big Ben, $65 a week, roughly $9 a day. Bronco 4x4, $65 a week. You pay 7 days a week for a vehicle, really. Service should be available 7 days a week as well, right? North Star Ford's Broncos at $65 a week includes 7 day a week service. We come to you to do it in your driveway and we include the maintenance. Ask our competition if they can match that. Contact North Star Ford to book your appointment. Offer ends May 30th.
Let's go!
So much flavor.
Cheers! This is going to be one hell of a competition.
What'd you guys make? The winning meal.
Wow.
There's a party happening in my mouth.
I'm here and I'm hungry.
I love to cook.
Ooh, I was called a chef. I must be doing something right.
This spring, only on Flavor Network. Stream on Stack TV.
Brought to you by Think Turkey, official launch partner of Flavor Network.
I'm Susan Holzman with the Calgary Children's Foundation. QR Calgary is happy to welcome Agnew Insurance, representing cooperators, as our hero of the month. Agnew Insurance is well known for their outstanding service when it comes to your insurance and financial needs. What you might not know is their dedication to their community and local charities. This month, Agnew Insurance will be making a generous donation to the Calgary Children's Foundation to help make the lives of children better in our community. Join QR Calgary as we salute Agnew Insurance as our hero of the month.
Hey Calgary, Shaman here, and I'm CEO at Hope Street Property Management. If you've ever thought about renting out your house, give me a shout, because now is a great time. The market's hot, and we have hundreds of pre-qualified tenants looking for great rental homes just like yours. Check out hopestreet.ca to learn more or for your free online rental evaluation.
Hope Street, helping busy homeowners manage their rentals and become armchair landlords who sleep easy.
hopestreet.ca.
From kegs to casks to bottle caps and beyond, every Thursday at 4:47 on QR Calgary, the sommeliers of Calgary Co-op Wine, Spirits, Beer take us on a deep dive of the striking complexities and subtle nuances of wine, spirits, and beer from around the world. Join us as we roll up our sleeves to discover what's worthy of going inside the glass.
Inside the Glass, Thursdays at 4:47 on QR Calgary, presented by Calgary Co-op Wine, Spirits, Beer.
Dealing with complex medical needs doesn't mean things need to be complicated, and you don't need to go to just another pharmacy, because you just found a pharmacy like no other. Introducing Curis, where caring to answer the phone, caring to understand your needs, and caring for you is their top priority. And with four Curis pharmacy locations across Calgary and growing, now's the perfect time to switch. C-U-R-I-S, Curis, a pharmacy like no other. Find a location near you at curispharmacy.ca.
As a business owner, keeping your workspace clean shouldn't be another thing on your to-do list. Leave it to the pros who know clean. At White Spot Janitorial, we provide top-quality janitorial services tailored to your needs. White Spot Janitorial has an amazing offer to new clients. When you sign up for our regular cleaning service, you'll receive a 20% discount on your first month. But hurry, offer is valid until June 30th. Visit whitespotjanitorial.com. White Spot Janitorial. Service is our mission. Clean is our statement.
Kick off the season with Stampeders VIP Night Out. Keep it on QR Calgary to win red zone seats for you and three friends for the June 7th home opener against the Ticats. Plus pregame on the west sidelines and VIP entry to Stamps House for an amazing meal before the game. You'll even hang out with Sarah and Andy. Listen for the VIP night code word at 6 a.m., 8 a.m., 3 p.m., 5 p.m., and 7 p.m. Then enter it at QRCalgary.com. Win a Stamps VIP Night Out from your Stampeder station, QR Calgary.
This is Conversations with Ben O'Hara Byrne.
It takes around 5 days and 325 sets of hands to assemble an iPad, they tell me. And they can turn a raw hunk of aluminum into a sleek design, complete with the bitten Apple logo, at the rate of 10,000 an hour. At the end of this process, I find 27-year-old Xiao Ying, who carves the aluminum burrs from 3,000 apples every shift. Patrick McGee is with us this half hour. He's a Canadian. He's based, though, in the Bay. He covers technology, but he's written a book called Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. Patrick, to step back a bit, because, of course, one of the ironies of Apple's products becoming so popular in China is that most of the kids who bought them couldn't care less where they were made, right? But they happen to be made in China. When does Apple and when does this Apple and China story start to really blossom? Because in the early noughts, one didn't think of China as being a particularly great place to build something as sophisticated and as high-end as the iPhone.
No, absolutely. Yeah. No, anyone, I want to say our age. I don't know how old we are. I'm 41, you know, so anyone like that will know that, China was the stuff where cheap stuff got made, shoddy stuff got made. Apple plays a pretty instrumental role. I mean, I'm talking nation building effort here, changing that perception and changing that reality. And how they do it is really the essence of the book. Now, I want to explain. I tell this through characters. It's a real character-driven story. It's not the characters you know, but it's the people in the weeds on the ground actually doing this. And the position that really got me so excited and made me think there's a book here is called Manufacturing Design Engineer, or MD. These are people who take the wild designs of Johnny Ive's design studio. Okay. Just think of like the chrome back iPod all white on the front, you know, the electronics completely packed in, and that can't be made in Cupertino. They might have the skills, they don't have the scale, they don't have the labor force, etc. So Apple begins making that in Taiwan and later in China. What does China have to offer in terms of tech competence? In a word, nothing. Nothing at all. So the MD guys are the ones that fly over to China by the plane load. And we can talk about, I really do mean by the plane load. I mean, we're talking every first class seat of the plane is Apple people. And they're flying over multiple times a week. I mean, later it's 50 flights a day. United actually accidentally confirmed this. And these are the people who train. They audit, they supervise. If a factory needs machinery, Apple buys it to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars and later to more than $15 billion. Apple is supplying these factories with massive equipment, cutting edge machinery to make their visions come true in China. It is an amazing story of building the most sophisticated supply chain on the planet, but Apple walked into a new geopolitical reality when in 2013, dictator for life Xi Jinping comes into power, thinks Apple's an exploitative force, and begins to really turn the tables on the world's greatest company. And this is after the death of Steve Jobs. You no longer have the founder mentality. You have the shareholder first guy, which is Tim Cook, and he begins to come up with a new strategy to basically placate Beijing and demonstrate to them how much they are doing for the country. And right. It's just a wild narrative. And I think it's the biggest untold tech story of the last 25 years.
Well, because the way you describe it, of course, is that everyone on this side of the Pacific will often talk about Apple sort of taking advantage of cheap labor, how Foxconn, which is a Taiwanese company, they build the iPhones. They have this giant, I've actually never been to their huge campus in southern China, but it's well known. There's a huge migrant labor source in China. So lots of workers that come in from other parts of the country. What they've created here instead is not only does Apple get this incredibly well-trained workforce that they train, China gets this incredibly well-trained workforce that ultimately can go build other things too.
Yeah, some people like to say that China's done a great job of vocational training. My answer is Apple is the vocational training. Apple is the vocation school in China for the advanced electronics sector. So the reason why the Chinese are so good at making smartphones is because Apple literally trained millions of people how to make them and then told its suppliers, make sure you are not so dependent just on us. You need to use these skills for somebody else because we don't want to obviate the need for a component and find that you go bankrupt. Because that was happening and that was not good for Apple. So what do they do? What would you do if you were told how to build cameras for a smartphone, how to build, the chassis, how to do the shining of the lens? I mean, so many things. Like, I'm not saying these are necessarily really complex tasks. Some of them are, and in aggregate, they're mind-boggling. But all these different tasks, and you've got people that are trained how to do it. If once Apple has trained you, and paid you very little, mind you, they go offer the same services to Huawei, Oppo, Xiaomi, etc. And these are the Chinese companies that now have a 55% market share across the world. I think this is also instrumental as to how electric vehicles become so dominant in China. Because what's the slang term for an EV? It's a smartphone on wheels.
Right. Unfortunately for Apple, I suppose, it becomes very, very dependent on a country that almost even when I was there was already seen as a global rival to its home, to its homeland, its home country, which is the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I say this is not a story about electronics globalization. It's a story about electronics Chinification. And Apple plays an instrumental role there. Because just think of how the iPhone goes from less than 5 million units in 2007 to almost a quarter billion by 2015, right? Lots of people think, oh, yeah, but there's like components coming in from 50 different countries or something. Like, are you nuts? There might be 50 different flags attached to various components and stuff. But for the vast majority of the parts, they are being built by these multinational companies in China. And over time, it's the multinationals operating in China that are getting squeezed out because Apple, to score political points and to get higher margins, lower costs, has been increasingly relying on what I call the red supply chain. Okay, so this is homegrown tech rivals in China that can basically mimic and do the same thing that the Koreans, the Japanese, the Americans can all do. And this is just demonstrable in Apple's own public filings where they list their top 200 suppliers, and there's not very many Chinese ones in the first report, and there's a hell of a lot now. They're the number one. They're dominant. There are more Chinese firms than there are Taiwanese or Americans or Korean.
Yeah, Patrick McGee is with us this hour. His book is called Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. We're really talking about how much Apple and Beijing sort of collaborated in many ways, used each other in many ways to create this incredible success story, both Apple's success story, as we well know, and of course, China's tech success story. We'll talk a bit about what's happened to it since, because China sort of has put much more of a squeeze on Apple than you may think. And also, can they decouple? Because of course, there's a lot of pressure on Apple these days, specifically from the Americans, to try to find to build so much in China or be so reliant on China. We'll talk about that after this.
Hear the amazing stories of everyday Calgarians doing amazing things. Tune in to True Calgarian on Connect with Sarah Crosby, Wednesdays in the 4 p.m. hour. True Calgarian is powered by Lone Star Mercedes, driving luxury.
Lone Star.
Hey, Dad, did you know when a village comes together, we can do amazing things?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like helping families have a safe place to stay and letting kids like me just be kids.
What do you mean?
I'm talking about In From the Cold. We learned about it at school. They're matching donations until June 8th.
Sounds like you've been doing your homework.
Maybe a little. We should donate.
You're a pretty smart kid. You know that?
Yeah. I know. So can we? I've got allowance money.
All right, let's do it.
A village can open doors for families facing homelessness. Visit avillagecan.ca to donate today.
It is absolutely the right time to buy.
Whatever you do, do not buy.
These stocks are bound to double.
The value has been cut in half.
There's always a pattern.
There's going to be guaranteed returns.
Yeah, if you're thinking about
When seemingly reliable sources say opposite things, who do you trust? Get trustworthy and unbiased investing information at checkfirst.ca. Brought to you by the Alberta Securities Commission.
How does an event get noticed? Chorus Creative. Video, audio, digital, whatever your event needs, we create it. Click to choruscreative.ca. Chorus Creative. We create.
Calling all Canadian employers. Be entered for a chance to win $1,000 by completing a brief online survey. First Peoples Development Inc.'s Labor Market Information Project, funded by Employment and Social Development Canada, would also like to send you a $50 gift card for completing the survey. The survey collects information on your business profile, past hiring activity, and future hiring. Learn more about programs and initiatives and take the employer survey at fpdinc.ca.
When you want to hear the music and not the road, drive on to Wright Restyling. They can upgrade your drive with SoundShield, so you can take your ride from this to this. Whether you want to improve the way you listen to music or just sweet silence, their sound deadening install can help block out road noise, vibrations, and rattles, so all you hear is what you want. Make your auto dreams into reality. Don't make Wright Restyling your first call. Make them your only call. Get your quote today at WrightRestyling.com.
Summertime is here again.
Purchase your 2025 Callaway Park season pass today. Just $69.95 plus GST per pass for a whole season of fun. That's a savings of 53%. Only until May 20th at your local Calgary Co-op or online at callawaypark.com. Enjoy unlimited rides, live entertainment, CP spray and play, and so much more. Callaway Park, your family playcation destination.
Callaway Park for everyone.
Toast to Stampede season at Stampede Cellar Uncorked. Featuring the champion wines from the Stampede Cellar Showdown International Wine Competition and local culinary offerings from Alberta's top restaurants, Stampede Cellar Uncorked has something to suit every palate and preference, from bold reds to crisp whites and more. Join us May 31st to sip, swirl, and savor wines and vote for best bites of the night. For more information and tickets, visit calgarystampede.com/uncorked.
QR Calgary invites you to support the 34th annual Paperny Family JCC Sports Dinner, Tuesday, May 27th, presented by ATB Financial. This year's guest speaker will be Canadian golf legend and Masters champion Mike Weir. And this year's Master of Ceremonies will be Grant Buchanan. Your event ticket supports this local community center as they continue to provide social, educational, and recreational programming. Get ahead of the game and purchase your tickets now at calgaryjcc.com. Proudly supported by QR Calgary.
At the end of the day, it's engaging talk that matters. You're listening to Conversations with Ben O'Hara Byrne.
Remember, the army of millions and millions of human beings screwing in little screws to make iPhones, that kind of thing is going to come to America. It's going to be automated, and great Americans, the tradecraft of America, is going to fix them, is going to work on them. There are going to be mechanics, there's going to be HVAC specialists, there's going to be electricians. The tradecraft of America, yeah, are high school educated Americans. The core to our workforce is going to have the greatest, yep, resurgence of jobs in the history of America to work on these high-tech factories, which are all coming to America. That's what's
going
to build our next generation of America.
Patrick McGee is with us. His book is called Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. He's Canadian as well. So welcome to the show, Patrick. It's been really interesting to watch in light of your book, which goes back and tells the whole story of how Apple came to be so ingrained in China and how China became so important to Apple and vice versa in many ways, that all of a sudden the pressure starts in the first Trump administration, that Apple starts to get squeezed from both sides. The Chinese start to squeeze Apple more because they do have a lot of leverage over the company. And the Americans are starting to squeeze Apple to start to decouple a bit from China. And it finds itself in a very bizarre situation for such a successful company.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give a metaphor here that I'm sort of repurposing from Henry Kissinger, right? So he'll point out that Americans play chess. And so think of how Trump goes after Huawei. Huawei is a massive threat to Apple. It is the first Chinese company that's not just imitating the iPhone, it is outmaneuvering it. And by 2019, it outsells the iPhone globally. Okay, not just in China, globally. I mean, for starters, I had a Huawei device living in Germany. Thing had a monochrome lens made by Leica. Beautiful camera. They were doing really well. I didn't know sort of the backstory at the time, but it's incredible. Well, Trump goes after the king, goes after Huawei, goes after the kill, right? The Trump administration deprives Huawei of using Google, which maybe doesn't matter so much in the U.S., but it absolutely matters for anyone living in Germany like I was owning a Huawei. You could no longer access Gmail. You could no longer access Google Maps. Decimated the business. It deprived Huawei of 5G technology just as 5G was taking off. So you couldn't buy a Huawei that had 5G. Well, who benefits from that? Apple. So Trump comes into office actually at some points advocating a boycott of Apple products, promising he's going to make Tim Cook build products in America and so forth. And instead, by kneecapping its greatest rival, Apple does incredibly well, in particular in China. And it gets supercharged by the fact that COVID-19 hits. And what do people do when they're sitting at home all day on their computers because they can't go out? They upgrade their electronics portfolios. So within a matter of 2 years, I believe, Apple profits in China go up by more than 100%. So there's this dramatic narrative there of Apple versus the Chinese competitors, and then it getting all geopolitical with Donald Trump trying to take action against Huawei. But what I'm trying to say is Trump plays chess, but Xi Jinping plays Go. Okay, that's the Chinese version, if you will, of chess. It's a very different game. And what I'm trying to point out is there's no equivalent of checkmate. Instead, you encircle your enemy essentially until they are put in an awkward position where they cannot move. Okay. So picture Tim Cook in a straitjacket right now. That is his position. He cannot move to America. He can't really move to India. He can get his PR people to tell you that he's doing that, but it's not true. And he's just really stuck. So Apple has been encircled. Their entire supply chain is in China. No other country on the planet is remotely capable of carrying out the quality, scale, and cost effectiveness that China is able to pull off for them.
Yeah, tell me about that, because obviously we've been reading the headlines about sort of investing in India and then Donald Trump putting the squeeze on Tim Cook even this week, saying, listen, we want you to start building these things in the U.S. Howard Lutnick's been on, you know, any number of talk shows talking about wanting Americans to put those little screws in iPhones. All of it sounds so ridiculous. But as you point out, a lot of this just isn't happening. Tell me a bit about India, because there's been lots of talk about them trying to reshore this kind of production, especially for America, to avoid tariffs, to send it to India or Vietnam.
Okay, let's do India, and then we'll come back to the U.S. Vietnam, by the way, I mean, just to briefly say, Vietnam has the skill. Vietnam doesn't have the scale. It's just never going to happen. China's population is 15 times that of Vietnam. So if you want to do iPhone production, it's just not going to happen. I mean, I would talk to people who say, basically, if you move your production from China to Vietnam, you run out of capacity just almost immediately, because it's 1/15, it's 1/10 the capacity. India has the scale. It doesn't have the skill. There basically is no supply chain in India for advanced electronics, certainly not comparable to China. And you can just look at, you know, the numbers of advanced robotics and things like that that the factories have, or it's frankly just the lack of factories in the topography. India's got a lot of great skills. You know, advanced manufacturing just really isn't one of them. Now, for tariff reasons, Apple has said that it's going to move its production of the iPhone to India so that every U.S. phone basically sold next year will say made in India on the box. That part is true. What's not really happening is the depth and breadth of supply chain. What you're moving is the assembly. So the final assembly of a product allows you to make a quote-unquote substantive change to the product, and that's all you need to be able to say made in India. But those phones are no less dependent on the China-centric supply chain, no less dependent than any other iPhone you've ever owned. Now, look, I really want them to do more and more in India, but the difference is they're not doing it and they should, but most people think they are doing it. So there's a big distinction there. I fully expect there to be all sorts of more movement and investments in India in the next few years. And I support that. I'm really bullish on Apple's sort of capabilities in doing that, but they're not doing it, not yet, not in the numbers that you'd expect.
Right. So in other words, all the supplies, essentially, that they're sending ready-made iPhone kits into India to have them assembled and sent to the U.S. to avoid
they're sub-assembled, essentially. But to be honest, yeah. I talked to a manufacturing design engineer who, as a joke, said they're basically made in China, disassembled in China, sent to India for reassembly, and stamped made in India. Now, again, that's a joke, but it's a joke with more than a grain of truth.
Yeah. And as for, I mean, what Donald Trump wants to see is a made in USA iPhone. You explained off the top that Apple was one of the last companies to abandon sort of making its products in America because it simply wasn't competitive and couldn't make them in any way that would be affordable to an American consumer, and were the last ones sort of to offshore, but did it very successfully. Interesting enough, Donald Trump now wants them to reshore, and it seems like there's just no way they can possibly build the sort of thing that American consumers expect, in America.
Look, if this was possible, who wouldn't be in favor of it? This would be amazing. I mean, quite frankly, I would love to see iPhones built in America. For a host of reasons, it's just never going to happen. We are not remotely competitive. This is not just to do with the fact that wages are much higher, but they are much higher. But we don't have the density of population, right? And we're not going to. I mean, frankly, just think of like what the MAGA reaction would be if you said, you know, what we really need is a hell of a lot more immigrants to fulfill these factories, right? I mean, that's not going to work. That's a total contradiction to what their belief system is. And you don't have the dynamism or flexibility of the population either. So just to give some staggering numbers, I have some reports of, they're from about a decade ago, but a single facility called, from a Taiwanese supplier called Pegatron was assembling iPhones. They had a standing state of 100,000 workers, but they were losing 25,000 workers per month, which meant that they were hiring 25,000 people per month.
So they have a 25% turnover rate every month?
Yes, it was literally more than 5% per week. I mean, this was such a problem for Apple that they actually engaged five different universities around the world to do research on what they could do to solve this problem. Because they've never had problem hiring people. They have problem maintaining people. So the average people at this Pegatron facility was staying at the factory about 65 days. So, like, that's such a competitive advantage that it's not something we're ever going to replicate. And philosophically, we would not want to replicate that, right?
No.
Nobody wants their son or daughter working in a factory where they're going to be there for 65 days because the conditions are so awful. So it's just not going to happen. People think it's a matter of willpower and cost. So therefore, you change it through incentives. You throw on a tariff. It's a total fantasy. It's not going to happen. But here's the problem. Tim Cook hasn't apparently, I mean, I don't know. I'm not in the room, but he hasn't told Donald Trump the reasons why this isn't going to happen. Instead, what he's done is put out a press release that basically implies, although it doesn't directly say, that Apple is investing $500 billion to bring back American manufacturing. Now, again, it doesn't say that, but if you're not scrutinizing it, that is the message you will come away thinking. And my best guess as to how Apple is saying that it's spending $500 billion is that it is counting investments and buybacks, which they do at more than $100 billion per year. It's multiplying that by the next 4 years, and it is calling that an investment in America. That is perhaps not incorrect. I'm not accusing them of accounting fraud, but it's very misleading to say that in a press release that refers to bringing back manufacturing.
Especially when what Donald Trump is saying is he wants them to be built. This isn't about stock buybacks and so on.
Patrick, no, exactly. The Trump administration is on the record saying Tim Cook's putting up $500 billion to do this. So they've been misled, just like everyone's been misled. And so, of course, Donald Trump is saying, stop doing the building in India. Let's do the $500 billion. But imagine if someone thinks I'm being, facetious or misleading here, just think about how much $500 billion is. The press release says this is going to generate 20,000 jobs. How bad would a government program have to be if the price tag was $500 billion and all you got was 20,000 jobs? It's ludicrous.
It doesn't make any sense. Patrick McGee is with us. His book is called Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. When we return, what next then? If the company finds itself in a bit of a tough spot with both the Americans wanting them to reshore to there, which is, as Patrick was mentioning, financially unfeasible and impossible, and with the Chinese putting the squeeze on them in China, what does the future look like for Apple? That's next.
Rock chip, Give it the kiss of death. Cal Alta Auto Glass will repair that rock chip same day, and they'll treat you like family. But what if you need a new windshield? Come on. Cal Alta, it's clear. They're going to treat you with respect. You see, they win Consumer Choice Awards every year. You know it's true because you heard it from me, the Glass Father. And I go through a lot of windshields.
Cal Alta Auto Glass.
The class of auto glass.
Four.
Register today for the first annual Kindness Classic, a family-friendly golf tournament for all ages in support of Kids Up Front Calgary, September 7th at Blue Devil Golf Club. It'll be a day of fairways, families, and philanthropy. Everyone is invited to participate. Kids, parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles can enjoy 9 holes of golf together while giving back to our community. To register or to become a sponsor, visit kidsupfrontcalgary.com.
More than a ticket.
Measles outbreaks are occurring in Canada, including Alberta. These outbreaks are highly preventable. Measles is an extremely contagious disease that is spread easily through the air. The best way to protect yourself, your family, and your community is to ensure you are up to date with your immunizations. Don't get measles. Get immunized. Visit alberta.ca/measles to find out if you're up to date and what to do if you're not. A message from the Government of Alberta.
Let's go!
Cheese! So much flavor.
Cheers!
This is going to be one hell of a competition.
What'd you guys make? The winning meal.
Wow.
There's a party happening in my mouth.
I'm here and I'm hungry.
I love to cook.
Ooh, I was called a chef.
I must be doing something right.
This spring, only on Flavor Network. Stream on Stack TV.
Brought to you by Hellman's, official launch partner of Flavor Network.
Gord Gillies here with Debbie Franchuk, RN and co-owner of Home Instead. Debbie, you provide a wide range of support services to help keep seniors living in their homes longer. How do you make sure there's a good match?
Well, Gord, it starts with our hiring. We're very fussy with our hires. We only hire about 1% to 2% of the applicants that actually apply to us.
Are families involved in finding the right person for their loved one?
Absolutely. We collaborate with the families to understand their loved one's hobbies, interests, maybe their meal preferences. That matching is the magic.
Deb, what do you say to families who may feel guilty about the need to bring in care?
Oh, please don't feel guilty. You're doing the right thing. You're helping your loved ones so that they can live with dignity and respect right where they want to remain, in their own home.
When your elderly loved one needs more care, choose Home Instead as your care partner. Home Instead provides highly personalized home care for the loved ones in your life, wherever they call home. Visit homeinsteadcalgary.com.
Running a small business is tough, now more than ever. Every marketing dollar has to work harder. That's why Canadian businesses trust Constant Contact. With email, events, and social tools, you can reach more customers, drive sales, and see real results. On average, every dollar spent on email marketing returns $36. That's ROI you can count on. Even in challenging times, our all-in-one marketing platform helps businesses grow. See for yourself. Start for free today at constantcontact.ca.
Hey, it's Ben Mulrooney. There's a thought out there that the best time to put out bad news publicly is while other major news is breaking. Oftentimes, these are smaller, yet still important stories that get missed. Well, that's not going to happen on our show, because I've got one that I want to share and give the attention to it that it deserves, especially because it affects so many Canadians. Plus, we'll set the table for King Charles' throne speech coming up, what to expect, and what does it signal about how Mark Carney will govern.
The Ben Mulrooney Show, noon to 2, weekday afternoons on QR Calgary.
You're listening to Conversations with Ben O'Hara Byrne.
The supply chain that Tim Cook so brilliantly built over there in Asia is all coordinated together to keep those prices the way that we're so used to paying them. And to move all that over here to make a U.S.-made iPhone, that just means an enormously expensive device that people won't be able to afford to buy.
Patrick McGee is with us this half hour. His book is called Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. So you describe what feels like a bit of an existential, and that's not a word I like to use, but a bit of an existential situation for Apple, because it finds itself under pressure from the Americans. Tariffs could hurt their products. Their stock hasn't really risen back up since Liberation Day, as many of their competitors has, or some of the other big tech companies in America. And it finds itself really reliant on a China supply chain, with a Beijing that's, you know, we don't know where this trade battle is going to go between China and the U.S. So it feels like, although they've made some really, really, really good bets over the past 25 years, that the future looks a little cloudy for Apple.
Yeah, if you think about this, when Donald Trump was talking to Vladimir Zelensky, he says, "You don't have the cards." Right. Well, Donald Trump, you don't have the cards when it comes to Apple. Beijing does. 90% of production is all in Beijing. And it's not that all roads lead through China. Most of the roads are already in China. There's been a quarter century of investment on the part of Apple, and there's been four decades of investments, you know, very exclusively into manufacturing since the early 1980s. This is all China cares about. They have a Nietzschean will to power to become the number one economy in the world, the middle kingdom, and Apple has been helping them into an unprecedented and completely unheralded degree. If there were an easy answer to my book, it would not be a compelling book. They cannot readily move to India. They cannot readily move to the U.S. And even if they said, "Patrick's wrong, we're going to invest crazy amounts in India," how do you think Beijing's going to react? Beijing's going to say, "Oh, that's unfortunate. We're losing our manufacturing dominance." No, they have them over a barrel. They can do any number of things. I mean, we're talking the simplest of things. Electricity at the Foxconn factory goes out for 4 hours, right? It's an authoritarian state. They can do that if they want. So they want Beijing. Beijing wants technology transfer to be a one-way gate. The technology transfer information comes in, it does not leave.
That being said, then, and of course, as you mentioned, the whole supply chain hasn't become less China-focused. It's become more China-focused, despite the fact that they're trying to offshore the final assembly of these products to other places to avoid these tariffs. So ultimately, then, I mean, does Apple survive this? I mean, I suppose that's the tough question that you ask. It's had this incredible run over the past 25 years. And as you point out, China's been an absolutely integral part of this run. But China is China, and Apple is Apple. It's such a strange, by the time one gets through your book, you realize what a very strange and unique marriage this has been.
I mean, you're making me think about this in a way that I haven't put it, so bear with me as I sort of think on the spot here. Yeah. Do we want Apple to survive this? Their business model specifically engenders technology transfer of the most important technologies on the planet, and we're giving it to our chief adversary day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out for every product launch. That strikes me as a sort of insane thing to do. You would not have done that to the Soviet Union throughout the 80s.
No, sir. So therein lies the dilemma for Apple. You know, they've built up this system whereby allowing Beijing to steal the technology is sort of quid pro quo for them being able to access this incredible supply chain and this huge pool of labor, one that's actually not as huge as it used to be. I suppose in the long term, this is going to be, I mean, Tim Cook's been trying to be as friendly as he can to the Trump administration, I suppose, to try to avoid the tariffs in the long run, perhaps avoid having to make some of these very tough calls. Maybe he gets away with it. Maybe he doesn't. Trump keeps talking about him, keeps putting the screws to him.
Yeah, here's what I would say. Vladimir Lenin once said that we will hang the capitalists with the very rope that they sell us. This is the 21st century iPhone version of that.
Well, Patrick, it's a fascinating book. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Cheers, Ben. Thanks, Canadians. Please go buy that book at Indigo. Make it a Heather's pick.
There you have it. Patrick McGee. Obviously, you can tell he's Canadian, but he's now based in the San Francisco area where he writes for the Financial Times. He's their correspondent who covers Apple and U.S. technology. But we've been talking about his new book, which is called Apple. The articles about it were called Apple Used China to Make a Profit. What China Got in Return Was Scarier. That was one of the articles I was just reading, but the book, in fact, is called Apple in China, The Capture of the World's Greatest Company. And there's a lot in the title. The idea that the world's greatest company was captured tells you a lot about where he's coming from. So here's what it boils down to. Apple set up this incredibly successful supply chain in southern China that allowed it to build iPhones and iPads, for instance, at scales unimaginable for such a well-made product. If you think about it, a pretty flawless product. They don't break down. There hasn't been huge recalls. People like to use them. They're designed beautifully. They're, as Patrick points out, they are a luxury product that many people own. Its market share in this country is 60%. To get that done, they needed a steady supply of inexpensive and trained labor. and they found it in China with the help of the Chinese government. Land was provided. People were trained. They trained people. In other words, they have this marriage and have now for the past 25 years, and certainly since the release of the iPhone in 2007. It has allowed Apple to become phenomenally successful. Huge amounts of profit in selling iPhones to people around the world. At the same time, China's become a different kind of manufacturing place. It leveraged, at least the argument in the book is, it leveraged the expertise that it was learning from Apple, the amount of employees that were trained to work in Apple's affiliated factories. You'll never actually see an Apple factory in China, by the way. They all carry different names of different subsidiaries and so on, such as the big one, Foxconn. But they trained this whole army of workers who could easily and have gone off to make other stuff. And then Chinese companies basically lifted the technology to make their own smartphones, which are now also excellent. And you'll find them around the world under brands like Huawei and Xiaomi and so on. So it's been a mutually beneficial relationship. That being said, Apple now finds itself caught between these two adversaries in this global trade war. On one side, America and Donald Trump saying, we don't want you to make the phones there anymore. You need to make them in America. And Apple saying, well, we just can't do that and keep them affordable. And the Chinese saying, listen, you rely on us. You rely on our supply chain. Therefore, we're going to tell you what apps can be on the iPhone in China. We can put the screws to you, whatever we want, about how these, mostly on the software side, but in other words, censoring their products within China, and Apple's had to agree to it. So it finds itself in a tricky position right now. It'll be very interesting to see where it goes from here. And obviously this notion that they can move all their supplies to India or all their supply chain to India is unrealistic. Vietnam, as Patrick is pointing out, is too small. And we've just been reading that no matter what happens, it looks like the iPhone 17, the next model, which will come out in the fall, they're going to jack up the prices and try not to blame tariffs. They're going to talk about the fact that it's just a better phone. When we return, what's in a name? What are the most popular baby names out there? Try to guess, because we'll share them with you after this.
I'm Susan Holzman with the Calgary Children's Foundation. QR Calgary is happy to welcome Agnew Insurance, representing cooperators, as our hero of the month. Agnew Insurance is well known for their outstanding service when it comes to your insurance and financial needs. What you might not know is their dedication to their community and local charities. This month, Agnew Insurance will be making a generous donation to the Calgary Children's Foundation to help make the lives of children better in our community. Join QR Calgary as we salute Agnew Insurance as our hero of the month.
All right, Jason Hominick, let's compare mortgages to food. If the main course is the mortgage, why should we do appies, do a little appetizer, and get a pre-approval first?
The pre-approvals are so important because you want to know that you can actually afford what you're about to buy, and you want to know what your payments are going to be. And more importantly, you want to know you can qualify. I look at the documents. We make sure that when you get a pre-approval, you can have confidence in that so you can buy the place that you really want.
Yeah, so the pre-approval's like the appetizer.
And you can find the menu at jason.mortgage.
Can you repeat that? My tinnitus is driving me crazy today.
Sound familiar? If you are ready to tackle tinnitus, the Calgary Ear Center is a one-stop shop specializing in tinnitus, hearing aids, and sound sensitivity. With over 30 years of audiological experience helping people with tinnitus, specialist Suzanne McLaren and her team will find the root causes and the best solution for your tinnitus. Visit calgaryearcenter.ca to find out more and book your one-hour meet and greet. Tackle tinnitus today with Calgary Ear Center. 403-685-0810.
Come on in to Home Network.
Welcome home!
And find experts who feel like family.
This is spectacular. I was not expecting this.
Ideas to inspire your everyday.
Brilliant. Beautiful.
And stories that will touch your heart.
Oh my God!
I love that big family hug.
There's no place like it. Welcome to Home Network. Stream on Stack TV.
Brought to you by Tangerine, official launch partner of Home Network.
Here we have the museum's most interesting work, entitled Hunger. The enormous spoon symbolizes the complex economy, while the peanut butter represents the artist's desire for world peace. This work of art evokes feelings of confusion, ambition, and hunger.
Creativity is subjective. The truth isn't.
And now, on to the scrunchy sculpture.
Advertising Standards Canada, because truth in advertising matters.
Calling all Canadian employers. Be entered for a chance to win $1,000 by... First People's Development Inc.'s Labor Market Information Project, funded by Employment and Social Development Canada, would also like to send you a $50 gift card for completing the survey. The survey collects information on your business profile, past hiring activity, and future hiring. Learn more about programs and initiatives and take the employer survey at fpdinc.ca.
Hi, I'm Scott Reeb of Cupboards Express. Our fine quality may seem old-timey, but our style is not. Keeping up with the best of Milan, New York, and Japan, we manufacture over 2,000 door styles right here in Alberta, from timeless classics to the most on-trend fashions. Don't see what you want? We could probably make it. Check out our new Real Slim Shaker Door, a real standout.
A real standout.
Keeping right up to date since 1958. Cupboards Express.
Connect with Sarah Crosby.
Online romance day.
I don't think anyone's going to like me off a dating app, Andy, if my husband got sucked up by aliens. I'm not going to be on the top of anyone's list unless they get to meet me, sit down, and go, okay, she can talk. Maybe she's a little funny. She's really caring. But to go on a head picture alone on an app, I don't think I'm many people's cup of tea.
Connect with Sarah Crosby. 2 till 6 weekday afternoons on QR Calgary. Brought to you by Verve Aspenwood's Retirement Home.
QR Calgary is 770 CHQR AM, a Chorus Entertainment radio station.
This is Global News. I'm Joshua Azizi. The Liberal caucus has voted down rules that would have strengthened the say of backbenchers in who should lead their party.
Many Liberal MPs still feel the shock and awe of former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau clinging to power for months, even as calls from within his party grew for him to step down before he finally did in January. But not enough of them felt this way to adopt new rules set out under the Reform Act that would prevent that from happening again by emboldening caucus members, allowing them to force a leadership review. Liberals were tight-lipped after their meeting. Caucus Chair James Maloney would only confirm that a majority voted against adopting the rules. Kyle Duggan, The Canadian Press, Ottawa.
Pierre Poilievre is signaling that the Liberals might have some conservative support when it comes to resolving Canada's trade war with the United States. The conservative leader met with his caucus Sunday, a day before the House of Commons is set to return. He says he's willing to cooperate with the Liberals when it comes to reestablishing Canada's sovereignty and economic independence.
I've already told the Prime Minister that we are happy to cooperate any way we can to bring about an end to this unnecessary dispute and restore not just our sovereignty, but also tariff-free access to the most successful international trading arrangement in the world.
Poilievre is also accusing Prime Minister Mark Carney of putting his elbows down after tough talk around counter-tariffs during the election campaign. Meanwhile, King Charles will visit Canada Monday for the first time since his coronation. He will read the speech from the throne Tuesday, becoming the first monarch since 1977 to read the document.